Welcome back to The Takeaway. It's Todd Zwillick with you today. We're rounding up the year by bringing you a series of interviews, voices from changemakers on topics like policy and science, technology, and a whole lot more. We talked to the editor of one of our partners, The New York Times, on what drives the media we consume. Jake Silverstein has been editor-in-chief of The New York Times Magazine for about a year and a half now. He was brought on board in part to breathe new life into a shrinking industry. Now, The New York Times is, as I mentioned, one of our partners, and you hear a lot of their journalists here on The Takeaway. We didn't want so much to promote the magazine as point out some of the very new things they're trying while their industry struggles. The magazine relaunched in February of this year, and Silverstein and his team have been journeying into some pretty new territory for a print publication, virtual reality. It's a potentially risky venture that Silverstein says is working for them right now, despite the overall anemic health of the news industry, and that's never far from the back of his mind.
I'd spend a fair amount of time thinking about it, although I would say I probably spend more time thinking about the health of my particular magazine than I do about the whole industry. I mean, you know, I look for ways that the magazine can be more successful and that rising tide can hopefully enable us to do more and more ambitious editorial projects.
And so, of course, a lot of the recent attention that you and the magazine have garnered doesn't come from print at all. It comes from this new foray into virtual reality, which is exciting and kind of gadgety and gimmicky and neat and high-tech and decidedly unprint.
Yes and no. I mean, one of the things that we loved about this project was that the way we were able to differentiate ourselves at The New York Times from the rest of the media companies out there that are getting into VR is that we were able to deliver to our readers a VR viewer. The reason that VR hasn't really caught on in terms of journalistic usage up until now is that the end users don't really have the headsets at home. So what differentiated us was that we could distribute these Google Cardboard headsets that enabled us to bring an immersive VR experience to, you know, a million of our home delivery subscribers. And that really set us apart from other companies. And what did that was that we had a legacy print operation that can get, you know, actual tactile objects into the hands of people. So we thought it was kind of a wonderful kind of poetry to the project that our old media system enabled this new media experience.
And so if people don't know, you distributed to all of these subscribers a cardboard box about the size of a small brick. It's got two kind of thick Coke bottle lenses, and you stick your eyes in it and see a virtual reality. Let's listen for a second to a clip from your Paris Vigils virtual reality film that you distributed, and then we'll talk about it.
I lost a young friend on Friday the 13th, a friend who was at the Bataclan. He went to the concert. He wanted me to go to the concert with him. I worked late. I was feeling tired, and I didn't go. Now I regret it. I tell myself, perhaps if I were there, he would be alive.
So the clip that we heard was from on the streets in Paris at a series of vigils that had happened in the days after the attacks. And you would be surrounded by people who in almost every situation that we were in got to be so comfortable with the presence of the VR camera that they were not paying any attention to it. And so you really began to feel as if you were part of that crowd. You were just amongst all these folks. And that's the kind of immersion that VR enables. And it's what separates it from traditional video and from photography and also, you know, text as well. When the first project that we used VR for, an 11-minute film about the global refugee crisis, in which we gave portraits of three children who have been displaced from their homes in that crisis. And as you experience these children's worlds, you began to feel a sense of connection to them, a kind of, you feel an empathy for the people who are seem to be right there in front of you. And it's that kind of connection, that sense that you are immersed in the place and it enables you to feel something for these people that is, I think, different from other forms of media that we're used to. VR added to that whole project this really special dimension. It sort of cuts through all of that and it puts you there and it allows you to feel something that I think can really drive a journalistic project like this.
Well, at the same time, of course, with all of the enthusiasm, are concerns, and I know you've heard these concerns journalistically, that journalism is supposed to be about being witness to events, not being part of events, and by its nature, this type of virtual reality production requires a certain amount of staging.
Well, first, I think that this is a form of bearing witness. In fact, I recall showing some early films from other producers to some editors in the newsroom, and they literally said, this changes what it means to bear witness. So we're not framing a shot for you. We're not pointing your eyes in a certain direction. We're putting you in a place and saying, look around, as if you were there yourself. I mean, we're very, very careful to observe all of the journalistic standards that accompany anything that we do. I think if it's done right, the potential for VR to be even more transparent than traditional video is absolutely there. You know, any new technology has questions that will arise around how it's put to use, and we're trying to answer them ourselves, and we hope to be a leader in establishing what some of the new journalistic conventions are around this medium.
You know, it's impossible, Jake Silverstein, to get around the fact that Star Wars comes out today. I'm excited.
It is
impossible. And a lot of people are.
I'm glad you brought it up.
It's impossible. Yeah, it's coming out. Everyone's excited. And a huge money event. Are you competing with this? Not Star Wars per se. Are you competing with this type of entertainment now?
I mean, we're competing with that type of entertainment. We're competing with people's social media feeds. We're competing with streaming on-demand television, the newest Netflix series. I mean, if somebody's going to binge watch Netflix, they're not going to be reading their New York Times Magazine. We have many, many competitors. The Times Magazine is a kind of a habitual weekend read. We're a magazine that is associated with a certain time of the week, and that's very useful to us in terms of competing with things like Star Wars or Netflix or what have you, is that, you know, people have a ritual around a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning when they sit down with their magazine, they can spend some time with it, and we believe that that gives us a certain kind of advantage, a certain kind of purchase on people's attention, and we really try to differentiate ourselves.
A sense of place and an experience of story. That's what the New York Times Magazine is going for in a new era of print journalism, struggling to compete, yeah, with Star Wars. It's true. Jake Silverstein is editor-in-chief of the New York Times Magazine. Jake, can I extract one promise from you before you go?
Please,
no,
what is it?
No VRing of the crossword, please. I like it the way it is.
You don't want to be in the office with Will Shortz as he's working on the crossword? Come on, that would be amazing.
Not the virtual equivalent of doing it in Sharpie. That's a little too risky.
Yeah, I will make that promise.
Jake Silverstein, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.